It's Friday, April 19th, and look, this is one of the biggest days of my life for 2024, because later today, there's a new Taylor Swift album coming out. The Tortured Poets Department is out later today. Good luck to anyone who tries to contact me this afternoon. I believe it comes out at 4 p.m. Oh boy. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen and this is What's Worth Talking About. 1,000 roles disestablished in just one day. But is that the end of the public service job cuts? There's less than 100 days to the Olympics and New Zealand's first woman wrestler to gain a place at the Games joins us to kōrero. Beetroot is well known for being a superfood, but is it veggie Viagra? And the UK's slightly odd version of Bird of the Year has wrapped up, so which creature was crowned Invertebrate of the Year? All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
The plans to cut back the public service have rolled on this week, with dramatic new totals being revealed. But is it all coming to an end, or can we expect more announcements? And how well is all of this being planned, and just what will the impact be? Here to help us get our heads around what's going on and answer some of those questions is Stuff political reporter Glenn McConnell. Welcome back.
Kia ora.
Let's get a handle on things. What is the total number so far of public servants who have lost their job?
Yeah, so far 3,000 roles have been disestablished. Yes, there will be plenty more to come, right? This is just from a few ministries. This week we've had two big ministries announced 1,000 job cuts between them. That's Oranga Tamariki and the Ministry of Education. But there are some other big ministries. The Ministry of Justice hasn't announced any layoff plans yet, so expect hundreds, probably more from there, and a few other big ones as well. This is really just the start.
And so you mentioned Ministry of Justice. That will be very interesting indeed. What do we know about whether there are more cuts in the pipeline?
So every ministry pretty much will need to make some cuts before May's budget. Some of them are taking their time. The Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, thousands of people work there, has been slowly chipping away since last year. The Ministry of Justice as well hasn't announced anything big. Ministry of Social Development hasn't announced anything big. These are big organisations. Could easily be accused of being quite back office. So, you know, people there will be kind of waiting to hear what happens.
You mentioned those 1,000 jobs that were disestablished this week from Ministry of Education and Oranga Tamariki. These are two, of course, of the biggest departments. So the numbers were always going to be quite large. But what sort of jobs are getting disestablished there? And where are they going? Is it just in Wellington?
No, they're not just in Wellington either. I've been hearing from Oranga Tamariki lawyers across the country saying that they have faced a freezing hire and have been having to work extra shifts, because some of that work, they say, is actually quite front line, having to go to court and represent the ministry when they need to intervene in child abuse and stuff like that. The Ministry of Education, 100 roles across the regional offices are going. These are people who the Public Service Association says work to ensure that children have speech therapy and assistance when they need extra help. So they're not just Wellington-based roles at all.
The government's asked for budget reductions, and that has led to job cuts. Do we know if these reduced budgets are going to change things in other ways and in other areas as well?
Yeah, you'd certainly expect so. And Oranga Tamariki is one ministry that has actually confirmed it will be looking to cut back on the contracts it has. A lot of these ministries effectively just hire other, you know, non-government organisations to do work in the community. Oranga Tamariki has signalled that some of those contracts will need to reduce. And I've heard just recently, actually, from the Mental Health Foundation. It relies on the Ministry of Health to give it money to do advocacy work and to help with people to get better mental health treatment. It is currently consulting on cutting 10 roles at that foundation. It says it isn't just because of government funding, and it hasn't been told it will have cuts, but it hasn't had its funding increase in quite some time.
The opposition says these cuts will affect services. The government says services will improve. Has there been any work done on what the impact of these changes will be and how we deal with that?
There's been incredibly little said, actually, so far about what the effect of these job losses will be. Every minister will insist that the frontline services won't be impacted. But, you know, to counter that, it's not like people are being paid to sit around and do nothing, right? There are jobs that they were doing that at one point somebody said was essential. this is going to be an ongoing question. And I think when we get past the budget, they'll have to really front up and say what projects are being cut. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon, he says that he wants to get rid of these dumb projects. But what does that mean? We still don't know. And as I've been reporting on kind of public service cuts for quite some time now, I'd like to get a bit more detail there.
This, of course, was a government that campaigned on law and order, but things don't appear to be going swimmingly with police, who have just rejected the government's latest pay offer. What happens now? They can't strike, can they?
No, they can't strike. Legally, the police force cannot strike. And they have been negotiating this pay offer now for more than a year. This rejection was the final rejection from police. It's now going to arbitration. That means to avoid a strike, they call in this third party to come and force either the government to pay more or force police to take the deal the government had previously offered. It's quite extraordinary, really. No other, apart from the Defence Force kind of workforce, is able to call in a referee to end the pay dispute. This will be really interesting to watch.
Is there any idea on timeline, or is it just sort of a wait and see for now?
No idea on timeline. Later today, the police department and the police officers will meet to work that out and to work out how to get an arbitrator in to settle this pay dispute.
Goodness gracious me. Staff political reporter Glenn McConnell, always great to chat.
Thank you.
If you or someone you know is being affected by these public service cuts and you did want to chat, you can always email us, newsable@staff.co.nz. We have just passed the 100 days mark until the Olympic Games in Paris, so the countdown is well and truly on. It is exciting for all of us, such a huge sporting event, but imagine what it's like for those taking part. Taylor Ford is the first New Zealand woman to represent this country at the Olympics in wrestling, and she joins us now for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Taylor, congratulations!
Thank you so much!
You're no stranger to a bit of competition, though. You've represented New Zealand at the Commonwealth Games. How do you think this, the Olympics, will be different?
The level will be a lot different. The girls will be harder to wrestle, so the experience level, because a lot of them are around my age, if not older as well, and there are some younger ones. So they're quite seasoned. I've wrestled a few of them at the world tournaments that I've been to over the years. So we're not strangers. But at this level, I've never done it before, so I know it's going to be a lot harder, and I'm actually quite excited to start my journey towards it.
It's so cool, and such a huge achievement to be New Zealand's first female wrestler in the Olympic team.
Oh, I know. I'm so excited because it kind of dawned on me, like, the other day. I was like, every step that I take, no one else has. So I'm like, oh. So I wake up, I'm like, no one's done this before.
I get to make the call.
Yeah.
I imagine your training schedule between now and the end of July is just relentless. Talk us through your training. What do you do?
So I'm still easing back into training. I've had a couple of weeks off post-qualifying. I did have a meeting with my coach and our technical director for my federation on Sunday. So we just sort of brainstormed a little bit, as we don't really have a template for how this is meant to pan out. So we're sort of making it up as we go along and doing what we feel is best as well. Just building up that phase, hopefully up until June when I start competing again, international and local as well. Hopefully back home for a couple of weeks, tweaking, fixing up anything, and then head to Paris. Probably about 4 or 5 days before I compete, and then compete.
Ooh, and I read somewhere, correct me if I'm wrong, that you'd have to train against the men because there's no one sort of at your level that can get you prepped.
So all my training partners are mostly men. I do have a couple of friends who are females who do come along, but it's not as frequent as the regular training members that I do have, which are all men. So the weight ranges between like 65 to 90, or sometimes there's like the odd 120 kilo man or something. But that also comes down to my adaptability and my experience and what I know and what to do to avoid like injuries and anything as well.
Is part of that because there aren't that many female wrestlers that you need to train with the men?
Yeah, so there are women wrestlers here in Australia, but they're interstate. So even so, there's like maybe 3 or 4 females like in other states or something like that, or they're younger. I did start cross-training in jiu-jitsu a few years back so I could get female competitors. But then again, when it came to competition, they kept pulling out and I ended up not having anyone to compete against in another sport. So that was really sad. I got real sad about it. Yeah. Because I was like, I need to get better, but I can't because I don't have, like, good competition. So then I just decided not to compete anymore and just stick with wrestling.
And did you move to Australia to pursue wrestling or fighting? What made that move for you?
Yeah, so the main reason was for wrestling because they had a technical coach here at the time. He's now retired. So I came here for good training partners because they had regular training partners around my weight, and also the coach was really good as well.
What, how and why did you get into wrestling in the first place?
My dad made me do it. Against my will.
No. We've all been there, Taylor. We've all been there.
Yeah. So it was initially, I think, for self-defense, like to help with self-defense, because Dad found out women's wrestling was in the Olympics. So they're also allowing females to wrestle at a gym that has since been knocked down due to the earthquakes back in Christchurch. So, yeah, he got me into it, and then just everything sort of escalated from there. And here I am.
And what are you most excited about for the Olympics this year? It's fine if it's croissant. If it's croissants, that's fine.
Yeah, actually, I think I did say that in an interview. I was like, I want to get one of those really big ones with those really big cups of coffee. Yeah, I'd love to do that. But no, what I'm most excited about is the build-up, I think, because I've never done it before. And I sort of, I don't know, I'm a sucker for things I haven't done before.
You mentioned just before we started the interview that there would be some cats running around. I do believe I've heard the cats running around. Am I correct?
Yeah, they're beating each other up. Yeah.
Oh, Taylor Ford, it's been a delight to meet you, Taylor Ford. All the best for Paris. Can't wait to see you do your thing. And thank you for joining us for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. And hey, it may be 100 odd days away yet, but get ready because New Zealanders will be able to watch the 2024 Paris Olympics live and exclusively on Sky, which will have wall-to-wall coverage across 12 Olympic channels on Sky Sport. Sky Sport Now will also have an Olympic pass available for purchase, while Sky Open will have extensive free-to-air coverage of the games as well. Wahoo! I can't wait. We are just about to find out if beetroot is vegetable Viagra. These are claims being made by a health expert in the UK. So, do they stack up? Newsable is investigating. And if you haven't already, chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform so you never miss important interviews like this one. We all know about eating our 5 servings a day. Or is it 7 or 8 now? I can't remember. Anyway, we're talking vegetables and how good they are for us. One that's had a bit of attention recently is beetroot, with claims that it's an aphrodisiac. A claim that it turns out isn't super well supported. However, beetroot could help with conditions such as high blood pressure. So here to explain why is Lauren Ball, a Professor of Community Health and Wellbeing at the University of Queensland. Welcome to Newsable, Lauren.
Thank you very much for having me and for chatting about beetroot with me.
it's all we're about to talk about for the next few minutes. How might beetroot be able to help with health conditions such as high blood pressure?
Yeah, it's something that scientists have been learning more about over the years. So beetroot has a lot of vitamins and minerals in it compared to other vegetables, which is why it can be called a superfood, which some of your listeners may have heard of. So it's rich in vitamin B and C, minerals and fiber and antioxidants. It's got something specific in there, which is called nitrates. There's also nitrates in some other foods, but there's a lot in beetroot. And it's those nitrates that may be having the effect on our blood pressure, that are the benefits that you were talking about before. Really, it helps our blood vessels to expand, meaning that our blood pressure reduces, improving our cardiovascular health. So all in all, that's very good news.
Exactly. And are there any other areas where beetroot's antioxidants might prove beneficial to health?
Other conditions that are related to cardiovascular disease that also involve our metabolic system, such as type 2 diabetes, have also shown improvements. There's also improvements that have been found for athletic performance, which is due to this same ability to improve circulation. And it's also this same thinking is why some people have claimed that maybe this could be good for our sex lives, really just getting the blood pumping. Really, the data or the science isn't there yet because people haven't looked into that from a research perspective before, as I'm sure you can understand.
So beetroot is not a veggie Viagra?
Not based on current science, but you never know. Maybe we'll be having a discussion again in the future.
Got me on board. I love beetroot personally, but yeah, it really does sound like a superfood. How much of it, though, are we needing to consume to see any of these benefits?
We should point out that you can consume beetroot in different ways. So, for example, you could have raw beetroot, for example, grated in a salad. You could cook beetroot, you could have juice, but you can also have beetroot in capsules or powders, which is like a freeze-dried version of beetroot, which has been used in some of the science, particularly in for athletic improvement and performance. So generally, if you have beetroot in any form as part of a healthy diet and you're having it regularly, for example, a couple of times a week, I think that would be what your average person might want to aim for in terms of having the health benefits.
It sounds like beetroot supplements might be the answer for people who don't like the taste of it. Are there any downsides to consuming beetroot other than it turning your poop purple and then there's that split second where you forgot you ate beetroot and you think your life is about to end?
Look, a lot of the studies don't report any negative side effects from taking beetroot. Yes, as you mentioned, it can change the color of your poo. It can also change the color of your urine. And in terms of supplements or powders, we always need to be careful about the manufacturing and the production of those supplements to ensure that it's not contaminated. But generally in New Zealand, we can be pretty safe with that.
I never knew I'd be beaming about beetroot. How brilliant is all of this? Lauren Baller, Professor of Community Health and Wellbeing from the University of Queensland, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to end the show on some huge news out of the United Kingdom this week. Because you know how we have Bird of the Year here? Well, The Guardian, the media outlet, decided to run its somewhat own version of that in the form of UK Invertebrate of the Year. For 2 weeks in April, Guardian writers and readers put forth the case for their favourite spineless creature that went to a public vote. And the Lumbricus terrestris won. Or the common earthworm. The Brits have crowned the earthworm as the UK's first invertebrate of the year. It took 38% of the vote. Coming in second place was the rare and endangered shrill carderbee, one of the UK's smallest bumblebees, if you wanted to know more about that. And the glowworm took home the bronze medal with 9% of the vote. In last place was the yellow-legged hornet, an invasive species that attacks honeybee colonies. So I'm not a great guy. So yeah, sorry, you deserve last place in my mind. I think I prefer Bird of the Year, though, as a concept. But I have to say, the more I read about the winners and losers of these invertebrates, I got quite into it because I just really feel like butterflies were robbed here. Should they not have been in the top three? Who doesn't love a butterfly? British people, apparently, because an earthworm is their favourite. That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Up the Wars, up the Canes, up the Knicks, up the Poles, up the Wellington States, and up the Olympics. Those are going to come around so quick. I've already gone sport mad, so imagine what I'm going to be like when those are on.
Newsable. News that's worth talking about. If you liked it and reckon it's also worth supporting, please make a contribution at stuff.co.nz/support.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
Do you want another very broad question? I've got a very broad question today.
Go on then.
What do you know about sports?
Up the Wars! Go the Black Caps! And don't forget Premier League football.
Oh, you do love a bit of Premier League footy, don't you? What team is it that you support again?
Oh, the current champions, Manchester City.
I think they're pronounced Arsenal. It's pronounced Arsenal.
But you know what's good about football?
Yeah, what?
They don't regulate soccer.
I'm sorry? There's a sport that regulates soccer?
Indeed there is, and it's cycling.
That's very strange. Why on earth do they regulate it?
Well, I know, but if you want to find out, you'll have to listen to the Big Stuff quiz. wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's a cliffhanger indeed. The Big Stuff Quiz is brought to you by Melbourne, Every Bit Different.